And now, broadcasting on Star Worldwide Networks, it's In the Green Room. Green is in, but what does that really mean for you? Join the gang for a fun and energetic half-glass, half-full perspective to what and how sustainability is the lifestyle for the future. It can really affect everything you do, from your health, wallet, environment, money, even your morals. So our goal, to help save the planet one show at a time. Now, welcome to the Green Room.
Welcome, everyone, to In the Green Room. I'm Kinga.
I'm Chet, and today we have a special episode. We have Rachel and Ryan in the house. Say what's up, guys.
We're going to call it the Rachel and Ryan Show.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hello.
and so Rachel's been studying sustainability for 5 years, and she and Ryan are about to go on a world tour, and so we're featuring our show to be about sustainability with tourism and traveling. So, Rachel, what do you think?
Indeed. Well, I have been blessed to be educated at University of Arizona in the Urban and Regional Development major. And then for my minor, I chose Sustainable Built Environments. And the travel she's talking about is I'm blessed enough to be going on a short graduation trip after. And we're going to try to make some sustainable decisions when we're choosing where to go and where to stay and how to get around.
Thanks, Rockin' Robin. And welcome also. We have Paul Hurt in the house. He's from the ASU School of Sustainability, History and Sustainability at ASU, specialist in water, energy, and natural resources. Also, he's a member of the board of directors of SRP, advocating for more clean, renewable energy. Welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much.
Nice to be back, actually.
And he's wearing a terrific shirt for those of you who can't see him. So.
And then we also want to welcome we've Martin Niner from the Junk Band in the house, and he's kind of our in-house musician.
Hello, everybody.
And he's in the cannabis world, saving.
Well, wait,
hold on.
Jam has the title of our house musician, so we can't just go throwing that around, but.
Yeah. Way to stay loyal to Jam. Hope you're doing well in LA.
Hi, Jam. Jam. So Jam.
Shout out to Jam. Jam now.
They're co.
I'm a sharer.
I don't know. Maybe you guys need to wrestle for it or something.
Well.
Room wrestling.
Martin has a song for our show, and we're gonna have a little introduction. Okay. He created the song for our show. Go ahead.
Do you want me to do the whole thing?
Yeah. Do your little verses. Yes.
All right. Here we go.
All right.
There we go. There was this girl. Her name was Kinga. If you ever meet her, she's quite a swinger.
Yeah.
Not really.
She's a girl I know. We love her so. There was this girl. Her name was
Quita.
Quita, thank you. If you'd ever meet her, she, with a smile, she'd greet you. She's a girl I know, and I love her so.
Yeah.
One more.
Yeah.
There was this guy. His name was Chet. You better listen to him. You won't regret.
Yeah.
He's a guy we know. And we love him so.
Yeah.
Woo! Oh, there'll be more.
I love the new verse.
Coming in future shows. So.
We want to hear those Saving the Planet verses.
Hard to rhyme sustainability. I'm working on that, but I'll get there. I'll get there.
Well, I love what you have so far, so thank you so much, Martin. We really appreciate you here. And then we have Rockin' Robin, which we got to get you a mic. We want you to talk. I mean, I like to hear everything you say is funny. And let's work on these sounds tonight, okay? I need some good ones. It's really important to me, right? Did we get a sound?
Ta-ta-ta-ta. Let's go.
We're not worthy!
I love it. So the direction today of the show is, first we want to find out why Rachel chose her major. And with the sustainability for 5 years that she's learned, she should be so smart and brilliant and be ready to save the planet. And what are your plans? And what have you learned? And how would you recommend people or other students or parents recommend that their kids or students go into this major?
Well, I just think it's one of the most important issues that humanity actually faces is the fact that we are not sustainable in very many ways at all. And we live on a finite planet with finite resources. And as we use them up, we have to find a way to change our linear system of just using and then disposing and find out how to make it a closed cycle where everything we use can be reused and put towards something else. So
yes,
I think it's
important. Circular economy.
Okay, yes. That's a great start. So, Paul, do you have anything to say to that?
No, I just I'm so thrilled that the next generation of leaders who's coming through our college classes these days actually care about the future, about the planet, about the justness of society, about reducing our waste and trying to live responsibly on this planet.
Yeah,
it's always been a minority of people, and I'm starting to get the feeling that this next generation is just core to your sort of your identity and your way of living your life, and I'm thrilled to see it.
Well, that's how it should be. It should be where everyone is just society or breeds people who are just naturally conscious of everything they're using and the environment around them, and largely humanity is, I think, disconnected from that. So luckily, as you're saying, this new generation is definitely reconnecting with the resources that we're using and just thinking more about the where everything comes from and not just being happy with the end result and tossing it, but thinking, where did this really come from? Like, my phone was made, or the parts for my phone were from dozens of countries, and what are the costs of something like that? So I think thinking about it is the first step, and educating others so they can even understand the interconnectedness of our society today, and then the next step from there is really just doing something to change it.
Well, and I want everyone out there that's listening to know that I became sustainable because of my kids, and especially Rachel, because when she was in...
Oh, okay, I see how it is.
No. Well, no, when she when she was in fifth or sixth grade, she started saying, don't buy me anything new. I want to go on trips. She would say, and she would save everything, and she would say, don't waste this, don't waste that. And she was trying to make everything into a project. And so that got me really inspired. And she really does shop at secondhand stores. Ryan, would you agree?
Yeah, we were just talking about this. She wanted to stop at Goodwill, actually, on the way to the show.
Yep.
We had probably, even this year in 2018, we've probably collectively spent at least a day inside Goodwill, at least 24 hours inside Goodwill. Rachel loves Goodwill, but...
I love shopping, but I don't want to support something that...
I think you're just very conscious that Goodwill has great deals. And
it's all reused clothing. Yeah. It's something that someone threw away, but I find it fashionable.
She'll take these shirts, these big shirts, and she likes to cut them and make them into, the college version shirts that are kind of cropped and a little bit sexier. And those same shirts, they sell new.
You can buy them at a boutique store like Swindler's on University in Tucson. They'll sell the same exact shirts for $80 and you can make it yourself at Goodwill for two, and you look just as fashionable. Yes. So
she does walk the walk. And Chet, you do too. You're very sustainable. But the first person that got me into sustainability was my daughter, Rachel. So,
what do you mean, back in kindergarten when I bought a Prius?
Does anyone in this room drive a Prius? I'm curious. Or any other eco-friendly?
Yeah.
I drove
my Prius here.
Oh, woo-hoo. I love it. Cheers to that.
And my wife and I are on the list waiting for our Tesla Model 3.
Oh,
I'm jealous.
We're supposed to
have
it
between
May and July.
Might be a longer way than you were expecting.
No, we ordered 2 years ago, so we're supposed to have it in the next month or two.
Wow.
So I
can't wait. What colors?
My wife prefers the silver. I prefer the white. I'm sure we'll get the silver.
Wow. That's how it goes.
I like
a
the silver, too.
So we'll get silver.
So is
it the two-tone Tesla might not be the best
car one, or is it the one, the four-wheel drive where the doors open?
No, this is the new Model 3, the Tesla for the masses. I can't really afford the Tesla Model S or the Model X. Those are out of my price range. But the Model 3 is the one they're taking.
That's my favorite one.
The 3?
Yes.
Well, that's the one that's just started coming off the production line, and it's affordable. It's about the same price as a Prius, the base model.
Is that the one that's a little bit more roomy?
And it looks way cooler, too.
Oh, it's so cool. I look at my Prius now, and I go, oh, I can't wait to trade that.
I
want to
see a picture.
But I love my Prius.
Tough it out for the environment.
Yeah. And I got solar panels on my roof, so we'll be charging the car with sunlight.
Okay,
wow.
Which is really nice. But will you miss the style of the Prius? That's the real question.
I think not.
We're in a sunny state, so it looks like you'll be powered up.
Yeah, well, I'll be powered up. That's
essentially
sure.
Be taking road trips for free if you ever wanted to go to California in your like solar-powered Prius. I mean,
Highway 1.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to what Rachel's been studying. I know that I recall her telling me all about how they studied a lot about Vancouver being such a sustainable city. And I just want to hear a little bit about that, because I know Rachel is very informed on that. And maybe you know something about it, too.
I know you want to go back to Vancouver. I've never actually been there, but we have truly studied it in a couple of my classes. Mainly, we've just been looking at Vancouverism. It's like the idea the way Vancouver has developed its urban fabric. And like it includes like the skyline. It's basically... keeping the dedicating the first few stories of buildings to the ambiance of the street and maintaining the city feel where you can walk to your destination, and there's it's a mixed use development where the first few floors you can go to businesses and
the
doctors.
Walkability, I think it's
so it's meant to be. You're not driving everywhere. You're not driving everywhere.
Right. And then all the higher floors are all. Residential, so you're living and you can walk right downstairs and go anywhere you want to in the city, essentially. So but they have this on a mass scale across the city, and then also the buildings they have are very, very tall, so it's a very dense living area, but that's more sustainable because you're not using up as much land as you would if you're spreading out like Phoenix.
Did you get to spend any time in Vancouver while you were studying it?
No, I prefaced it by saying, unfortunately, I've never been to Vancouver.
But that's one of the places we're going for graduation.
Fantastic city. You're going to love
go.
It there.
That's,
yeah. We can go this weekend, actually, if you want to go.
A little
we're going to be going to Vegas to go for some sustainability. So.
Oh, I forgot. You're going to your EDC.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to a music festival this weekend. He was joking.
Yeah.
Part of the grad trip.
Okay, so do you know anything about Vancouverism?
Yeah, I lived up in Washington State for 11 years. I taught at Washington State University, and I love the Pacific Northwest. And Vancouver is really one of the great cities of North America. And as you were mentioning, Rachel, that every urban area has a kind of a personality or characteristics or traits. And mm-hmm. I was laughing when you mentioned that because I thought about Portland. Portland has a really interesting... you know, Portlandia, kind of keep Portland weird.
I love Portland.
It's a gorgeous
love
city.
Love Portland. I could live there. I love it.
Yeah, you see more bikers and drivers in Portland. It's unbelievable.
And so much art.
Very progressive.
Right. And you know, it's a rainy city up north, but people ride their bikes and they walk. It reminds me of Amsterdam. If you've ever been to Amsterdam.
We're going. That's one of the countries we're going to.
More people get around on bicycles in Amsterdam than any other way. I mean, there's just like, you know... just crowds of bicyclists everywhere, people going to work on their bicycles in these rainy, dreary winters in Amsterdam. It's a culture. It's a way of...
Well, and it's a way, interesting that you noted they're like rainy and dreary, but when you get out and get your blood pumping, it actually releases endorphins and improves your mood. So through movement and cycling around to get to your destination, it's another way in a dreary city to improve your mood.
Really, and a little bit of good coffee doesn't help.
In a sunny city, too.
And good beer.
Good beer and good coffee.
Oh, definitely. Definitely
good destinations, really.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And the infrastructure for it.
So with having Paul Hurt from the ASU School of Sustainability and History and School of Sustainability, and Rachel, after studying 5 years, I want to know from the two of you, here you're saying what these great sustainable cities like Vancouver, like Portland, and although I love Arizona so much, how can we get Arizona on the map of being more sustainable? What are your recommendations of how we can change how we are here and how we can be more like Vancouver and more like Portland, Oregon?
Well, for one, our climate is different, so that presents its own set of unique challenges. In Phoenix, it wasn't as popular to build up because heat rises, as you all know, and it's hard to have a...
That's a good point.
It was in the earlier days of Phoenix's development, it was more difficult to have higher buildings because the heat would rise to the top, and it's super expensive for energy costs. So this city has, or the surrounding areas are just prepped flat land waiting for development, and that's where the city's gone outward to where the land is that's been the cheapest option so far. So now it's really just about adapting the city to make sustainable tweaks that will help with what we already have, because like we'll never be a Portland. It's too hot. You can't ride. It's kind of unrealistic.
Well, for example, we're not recycling.
At all, or
Chet, your mic is off. We can't hear you on
technical.
Here. No,
technical.
No, that one's always been broken. Okay, so sorry, we can't hear what Chet's saying. We've got to get him hooked on somehow.
Waiting for Chet.
Okay, waiting for Chet. Technical difficulties. We need to have go to a song. Here we go, Martin.
Music
go.
Break.
Now? Yeah, is it working now?
This is protest song.
Okay, yeah. We're good now.
It's about a microphone.
Ow! It is fixed.
It's really not working very well.
Sing it, Martin. Sing it.
I think we need a brand new one. You think Dave Pratt could maybe afford a new one? I would think so. Just one, that's all we need. Just one, Dave, if you're listening.
In fact, I had that mic last time, and I had to keep holding it in there, and it was very stressful.
Oh, no.
Yeah. All right, there we go.
Your voice sounds great. All right, back to, thank you. See, that's what we need. We're just going to go to song every time we have a little glitch. It's perfect. Okay, great. So, Chet, we don't know what we were talking about.
I was just asking Rachel, haven't improvements in, like, building materials and stuff, like, erase that problem now? So in Arizona, they can build up like now, and they wouldn't run into that issue, right?
Remind me what you're talking about.
She was saying that
hot buildings.
Okay.
She was basically saying that like it was hard to keep buildings cool really tall. Well,
that's true. That's why they had lower ceilings. That's true.
Well, it was partially, economic driven because it was cheaper to just build on
flat
land.
Mic on, or put the camera on you and ask the question.
Yes.
Okay, do you want to repeat
that?
Okay,
well, we were just talking about how Vancouver's so sustainable for all their tall
buildings.
Well,
Vancouver,
so, like,
at what point,
like, is it unsustainable for you to have a very condensed population living a bunch of tall buildings? That's kind of what I'm saying.
It is more sustainable technically to be living denser, but Phoenix has built out, I was saying, because of the
economic advantages.
Oh, no, so I'm saying going forward as the population here grows, is it better for us to start to go up now?
We would make hypothetically to improve on Phoenix's
sustainability
in general, and luckily the addition of the streetcar, or in Tucson it's called the streetcar. It's here, it's the light rail. The light rail. So one of the specific aspects of my studies that I've become very interested in is transit-oriented development, and it's essentially a sustainability fix for a city kind of like Phoenix, where it's very spread out, but going forward, we can make improvements and make the city denser. So it's focusing on transit ways that can have a denser population right next to the transit way. So we're adding the light rail in Phoenix, and I know they're planning on expanding it to reach further. Mm-hmm. So if there's a zone of denser development regulations that are allowed along that transit rail, that is a way that we can deal with future growing population in Phoenix, but still fitting everyone closer together.
I love it. I love it. Well, yeah. Paul, a question for you. Don't you feel our downtown is becoming way more sustainability? We're building up and we're having, what do you think?
Well, yeah, it's becoming a more vibrant downtown. Mm-hmm. And because we're paying more attention to how we build our buildings, it's becoming more energy efficient, which is more sustainable. So, Chet, you were asking earlier, is there a technology that can deal with that problem of hot buildings?
Well, I was kind of under the impression that building materials have become they've evolved to a point where they can counteract those effects.
Yes,
basically.
Well, another
insulation
very important aspect of that is the design of the building itself. Like the, did we mention?
Yeah, I was just calling to the fact that we need to go up. Like,
yes.
You kind of,
Yes. This is Rachel's major. I want to hear her talk. This is awesome. I like that you're challenging her. This is good. That's what I want to hear.
I was just asking a question. I didn't. That's not what my degree is in.
Yes. Well, as we go forward, we can focus on green building, and LEED is one of the methods of grading, I guess you could say.
Certification.
Building can be certified, and there's various essentially like levels of green or of LEED certifications.
What is the top of the echelon of LEED certified?
Platinum or like a net zero building, which actually makes more energy than it uses. So it'll be outfitted with solar panels and then also a slew of energy saving techniques as well that are like on the,
Such as?
The
double
list goes
and triple paned windows.
That was the first thing the building was
sitting in. High efficiency air conditioning.
Long windows, and I was thinking these could be double pane.
Low flush toilets too, like just trying to think of every time you use water or electricity anywhere. LED light bulbs.
LED, yeah.
Or like even like site orientation techniques, like taking advantage of what side of the building has sunlight hitting it, and like adding windows or walls strategically to either block or let natural sunlight in.
So. Right. Here in Arizona, the hottest side of a house or building is the west side, where the sun is setting, and it just bakes all afternoon from noon on until sunset. And you want to have fewer windows and more insulation on the west side in Arizona. Yes. In northern climates, the north side hardly gets any sun because the sun's always low to the south most of the year. And so you have fewer windows on the north side of your house. So there's all kinds of ways of designing houses that are more energy efficient that don't even cost anything extra.
Exactly.
And if you are living in a house and you plant a tree on that west side of your house, not only are you going to be shading your house, which will bring the temperature down a lot, bring your electric bills down a lot, but you'll also be planting a tree, which will, you know, obviously be releasing oxygen into the environment. Right.
Exactly. So these are these changes that can be made on
the
citywide scale, like existing buildings, you can plant a tree. If you're building a new building, you can take into account the orientation. These are just great, like, little examples.
Well, I just bought a house, so give me some tips on what I can do, because as you know, I'm in the process of just about to remodel. We've done a little bit of demolition. Tell me what I can do.
For starters,
give me some tips.
Shade the west side of your house. You'll save on energy.
Okay.
Hey, you can't. Hey, real original right there. I see
so
what
Paul,
it is.
You need to come over too.
Insulation. So, I mean, it's not even a high technology. Insulation has been around for a long time, but we just didn't bother using it. Up until the 1970s, when we had the big energy crisis in 1973 with the OPEC oil embargo, suddenly the cost of energy went up, and suddenly everybody started paying more attention to building codes and insulation. If you have a house that was built prior to 1975 or so, it probably was built without insulation. If it was a block house, the sun's beating on it, and then it radiates into the house all day long. I had one of these houses in Tucson that was built in 1923.
No.
We couldn't keep it cool in the summer, and we couldn't keep it warm in the winter. And we spent tons of money on heating in the winter and a swamp cooler in the summer, and we were hot all summer and freezing all winter.
Our house right now in Tucson is built in 28, so
we know what I'm talking about.
We feel your pain.
Yeah, I was near Stonehouse Speedway. Were you anywhere there?
Yeah.
But if you add insulation to your house, and now, you know, building codes require insulation, we should ramp up those building codes. My wife and I built a home down in the Chiricahua Mountains, and we built it out of a particular material that's super insulating. It has R43 insulation. Typical house has maybe R15 or R20 or R30 in the roof. We've got R43 in our walls and our roof. It's like living inside a down sleeping bag.
Wow.
In the wintertime, we need hardly any heat, and it's comfortable. In the summertime, we don't need any cooling, and it's still comfortable because there's no transfer of heat out of the house in the winter or transfer of heat from outside into the house in the summer. You spend a little extra money at the beginning building.
Exactly.
Is that initial startup cost is that much greater? But then with all the energy you save over the next 15,
it's
20,
so
however
it.
Many years you enjoy the house.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're saving money at that point later.
We made back our investment in probably 2 years.
Yeah.
And we're going to live there for the rest of our lives.
And you have solar, too.
Not on that house, but we're getting it next year.
Okay. Approximately how much more expensive is building with that material?
10% more. But
well, that's not bad
actually,
at all.
It turned out to be the same price because the material that we built with, they're called structural insulated panels. They go up much faster than a typical house. Our entire house was built by two guys in 7 days.
You spent less hourly wage.
Exactly.
7 days.
So we saved money on labor. We spent more on materials and saved money on labor.
Beautiful.
So, yeah.
Wait, can I get this person's name and the company's name? I want them to come on
Well,
over.
the company was in Tucson, and they went bankrupt about 10 years ago. But, you can find other companies that sell structural insulated panels. They're called SIPs, S-I-P-s. Look them up online. Yep.
For those listening, there's been a lot of innovation on insulation within this industry.
So on this note of building and sustainability, I have a question for both Rachel and Paul. I want more light in my kitchen and my master bath. How sustainable is it to add skylights? Because I need the light, so that means I'll have less electricity during the day, but then I'm also going to have that sun beating down, so I need to turn up the air. What do you think?
Is that sustainable or not? Go ahead, Rachel.
Oh, I was going to say, going with the technological improvements, they now actually sell skylights that are they're built to mimic actual lights, so you can control how much light is coming through the skylight. So you can almost turn, like if you want like full sun, you can turn it all the way on and it's open as much as possible, or you can like reduce the amount of sunlight that comes through the opening, and then it's like a nightlight.
Okay, I need to have that kind of skylight. Do you know what it's called?
Shoot, I'm not sure. I'm sure there's a few. Oh,
there's something called light tubes, but I don't know.
That's the one I've heard of. I think.
Yeah,
but yeah,
I don't think it's called light tubes because that's what I have existing, and they're small. They're small little light tubes.
Yep.
They're small, and it doesn't provide enough light.
You can also get skylights with louvers, like you were talking about, Rachel. That you can sort of reduce the amount of sun that's coming through. So during midday, you can close the louvers, and the sun doesn't beat down through. And
that's
then
what
in
I
the
need.
Morning and afternoon, you can open them up.
So something that I was exciting.
And it's going to save on your electricity bill because you'll have natural lighting.
Right.
In addition to just having a more aesthetically pleasing house because I like natural light.
So I don't know if you know anything about that plan where you can go where you can't use your electricity from like 3 to 6.
I'm on that.
You're on
time
that plan.
Time of use plan.
Does that work?
Depends on what
you
mean by work.
Can you explain what it is? I don't know about this actually.
Electric utility companies offer time of use rate plans.
Do you use APS?
I'm with SRP.
SRP, okay.
He's on the board of SRP.
Yeah, I'm on the board of SRP.
Oh, awesome.
He's not, that'd be traitorous.
We need to talk to you.
So that'd be like Batman, like, chilling with Superman all the time. That'd be weird.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Or no, wait, wouldn't it
He's
be
He's supposed
like,
to be with Catwoman, right? I don't know.
Superman chilling with the Joker?
And Robin.
There you go.
I don't know.
I know, I think it's more
you're
like
right,
the Joker.
You're right, that's an awful...
My colleagues at SRP wouldn't like that comment.
I already forget I said that. Just going to move forward here.
So a time of use rate plan is when you pay more for energy during peak hours and pay less for energy during off-peak hours. So there's fewer people using electricity in the middle of the night, and so there's a lot of underutilized capacity. So in a time of use plan, utilities will say, we'll only charge you 7 cents a kilowatt hour in the middle of the night, but we're going to charge you 15 or 20 cents a kilowatt hour in the late afternoon and evening when everybody wants energy from us.
I like that. Yeah. So it's incentivizing choosing to use your electricity if possible during not peak hours.
Right.
So they're kind of, in a way, like paying you
to conserve.
And reduce like traffic during peak hour times.
It makes for a more efficient electric system.
How much can you save on that plan? It's good for somebody who's like ready to plan for that.
Yes. You have to be willing to manage your...
Well, I know, and Chet and I talked about this.
You're going to blast the AC at 4 o'clock. I just know it's going
to
happen.
Oh, hold on. So you have to turn the air off between 3 and 6?
No, you don't turn it off. You just reduce your consumption. So maybe you pre-cool your house. So right now, SRP's time of use plan is you pay more between 1 p.m. and 8 p.m. So you pre-cool your house before 1, and then you move your thermostat up from, say, 78 to 80 or 81 between 1 and 5. And it's a little bit warmer.
But isn't that bad for the AC to do that, to jimmy it around?
Not just a few.
Well, your insulation is good.
My ex used to say that. He used to say, if you move the thermometer, if you change the air temperature that much every day, it's going to break.
I think it's just an urban legend.
It's something I probably did on MythBusters.
What you should look into doing, though, for sure, also, is adding solar panels to your roof.
Right.
Because I think it's cool to be green nowadays.
Da, na, na,
it is.
Na, na,
so you can actually.
We're going to a song right now. Sorry. I looked over at Martin and his puppy dog eyes looked like, I'm left out. He needs a song. All right. We're coming back to this great conversation. It's just kind of chilling with Rachel and Ryan and Paul Hurt from ESU School of Sustainability. But now we're going back.
In the green room. Chill.
Right, Chet? Saving the planet.
One show at a time.
Woo!
All right, we're gonna do. I'm inspired by the conversation today. Well, we're talking about sustainability. Well, Rockin' Robin, she wants a show on flexibility, that's why we like her. I think it's sustainable. Well, we're on a show called In the Green Room. Well, we're talking about good things without all that gloom and doom. Talking about sustainability. Tap into your nobility and your ability. To sustain right here, right now, take a stand, or maybe sit down.
Woo!
There you go, little improv.
Wow, I love it. I mean, your voice, and you're so musical, and just it's fun. I love it.
Nice. Rock and roll, and cheers. Magic Martin.
Woo-hoo!
Here we go. And
thanks,
flexibility.
Martin.
There we go. Thanks, Martin. Martin Niner with the Junk Band. And what's the company you work for, Monarch?
I work with Monarch Dispensary and Monarch Wholesale. We also work with brands called Huxton and Kiva and Drift. And we're partnered with some amazing folks around the Valley, which we'll be talking about in future shows.
And you're saving the planet.
I am saving the planet one show at a time. I've been on three
one
in a row.
One toke at a time, did you say?
One toke at a time as well. That's my own personal philosophy. But that's not the show, Paul.
Thank you so much, Martin. We're just so happy. So once again, we're here at In the Green Room, and we've got Paul Hurt from School of ASU Sustainability and History?
History and Sustainability.
And you are also on the board of SRP, which I don't know what you really, are you a deciding member? Are there like 12 people? What
There's
do you guys
14,
do?
14 members of the board of directors, plus the president and vice president. We set policy for SRP. And I ran in 2016 in order to be a voice for advocating for more clean, renewable energy. Two of us won in 2016, and two more pro-solar candidates won just last month, and were seated first week of May, and now there are four pro-solar people on the board of directors of SRP, and SRP is moving more directly and judiciously in the direction of embracing clean, renewable energy.
I think you should run for governor.
No, there's a good guy running for governor right now, Steve Farley. I support him, and
I support you.
Hey, can I address a myth? Can I address a myth about Phoenix that you brought up, Kinga?
Yes, yes.
So you
call
say,
her
can,
out.
You know, can we make Phoenix sustainable?
Can we make Phoenix great again?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
you're not allowed to use that phrase.
Too far gone.
It's like we're not allowed to use the phrase. Sad anymore either.
Sad.
So when people talk about sustainable cities, they mention Portland, they mention Vancouver. Nobody ever mentions Phoenix. And actually, there is a guy named Andrew Russ.
Hold on. Huh? Phoenix is kind of a testament to human limits to begin with, because
could be.
humans maybe do not belong living in a 110 degree environment in the middle of the desert. So the existence of AC has definitely...
Rachel?
I beg to differ.
I beg to differ because in Tucson, Rachel,
the Tohono O'odham people have been living in the Tucson Valley for 7,000 years plus.
True.
So I don't know. And this place has been a desert for at least 7,000 years.
Yeah. So let me address that too.
It's an interesting Everybody, topic.
You know, because most Americans grew up in northern climates, they assume that where it's hot, it's not sustainable. And they think, wow, it gets to be 110, 115, even 120 degrees. How could you possibly live there? You shouldn't live there. Nobody says that when it gets to 30 below in Minnesota.
Thank you.
So we've got a bias.
Arizona.
And if you look at the cost of energy for heating homes up north along the Canada border, it's much more energy intensive to heat a home in the cold climate than it is to cool an insulated home in a hot climate.
I actually spend less
money on energy here in Phoenix cooling in the summer than I spent heating my house in the winter in Washington State.
It makes sense. All ancient civilizations too come from like some of the hottest parts of the world. So you have to think they just made the right choices and adaptations to survive in those climates. So
are like the True. Byproducts of heating a house like the same level of impact in the environment as the byproducts of cooling a house, though?
It depends on how you heat it. In the old days, we used to burn fires, and that's pretty dirty.
Not very sustainable. Not helpful
indoors. Then we went to coal. That was even dirtier. Then we went to fuel oil. It emits CO2. It's a little cleaner, but emits CO2. Now we're using natural gas. There have been a lot of technological innovations in heat pump technology for getting heat out of ambient air. And you can buy a combination air conditioning heating system now with SEER ratings that are up over 18, 20, 22. And I can cool my home in southeast Arizona in the summertime with about 350 watts.
Wow.
That's three old 100-watt light bulbs. It used to be 10 times as much wattage to cool a house. That's how rapidly we've advanced in creating energy-efficient cooling and heating. So if you're willing to invest in new generation...
I was going to say, if you're willing to invest, that's the key.
Yeah.
It's because if only a few people have it, it's not going to make the desired effect on the large scale.
Well,
it's about spreading these principles. It's good the early adopters like you, the first people who have them, have to... make sure that other people know about them,
right?
And hopefully it'll be adopted on a large scale.
Yeah.
Well, the Native American people lived on these deserts and they had all their reservations in the desert, and they were very sustainable. So I agree with what Paul's saying. It doesn't mean, okay, we're hot here, so we're not sustainable. I guess where I'm talking about where we're lacking is, for example, I live in PV. Well, now I'm moving to, actually it's borderline PV/Phoenix. And in Phoenix, you can recycle for free, but if you live in PV, you have to pay. So
PV, Paradise Valley. Mm-hmm.
So in Paradise Valley, the homes in Paradise Valley are, you know, they're pretty expensive homes. You can't touch anything under $1 million. And the homes, I would say only 25% of the people recycle. Mm-hmm. And what's wrong with that? Why are the homes where they can really afford it not recycling? And
About urban design, isn't it, Rachel? This is what you studied, is urban design. We make a whole lot of bad decisions in how we design buildings and how we design our urban forms, and we need to make better decisions. And there's all this infrastructure and inertia that we have to resolve and rebuild, and there's also inequities between the haves and the have-nots. And so why don't you talk about that a little bit, Rachel?
I agree, and I think... Ryan, you got a point.
Ryan.
You go for it.
No, microphones,
Ryan, let's go. Ryan's got a point. Well, here we go.
Definitely, like, a big problem here is the infrastructure. It's old and outdated, and it's not as... They're not up to LEED's standards, but also I think a big problem is policy. I think because these people aren't...
It's government. I think it's government.
They're not forced to recycle. And like in San Francisco and a lot of places along the West Coast, like Portland, all these other cities we talked about earlier, like the government there and the city council, they're so progressive that they force you to recycle and to collect your compost. And they actually supply you with compost bins. And I think it's because of, like...
We don't have that in
PV.
Well,
it starts with changing the culture, and that's why we started the show, so that we can, you know, try to spread the message.
Shit! My gosh.
Maybe I'll run for city council. I'll change it.
The world.
The good son.
Trying to awkwardly claw me or something.
Back to Rachel. I don't want to steal your shine.
Oh, no. Well, it's funny. Me and Ryan have actually talked about this before, because sometimes he'll be like, what are you studying? Like, what are you learning about? And it's literally because some of the first introductory classes I took were about you have to know the reality of it first before you can learn how to change it. And like the reality is a lot of people do not ever think about this.
That's what this show's about. It's about awareness, and we're saving the planet.
Well, growing up, like, we've never had a recycling bin or anything because the city didn't offer it. Hold on.
Okay, now that she says that, we would throw our recycling. This sounds embarrassing, but I'm going to say the truth. We had a 4-car garage that we would throw our recycling stuff into because my ex would want to drive the recycling to
one of our
commercial
buildings.
Nobody
wants to hear your stories about your ex.
No, it's positive. We did recycle, but it would all build up.
But yeah, well,
he didn't want to spend.
We have a huge truckload, and we take all the recycling over, but it wasn't offered in our city, so we had to go. Mm-hmm. Over, we had to deal with.
We were channeling our inner Mr. Krabs.
The breakup, or the buildup of all the recycling, and then go drive it away. But it would have been so much easier if it was an integral part of the community, where it was just second nature to recycle and compost. And I mean, ultimately, it sounds like it might sound crazy, but trash should be illegal. Like.
Yeah, it sounds crazy but
it's
not crazy.
It's not crazy at all. Like, trash should be illegal. But even more crazy is the thought of a landfill.
Yeah.
Digging holes all over Earth and filling the shit, excuse my French, that we create into the hole and then covering it up and thinking it's going to go away.
Well, actually,
it would be better for
the environment if it were shit, because then it would be
accurate.
It'd be fertilizer.
Yeah, exactly. So that would be a lot better. We're actually filling up with plastic, which is catastrophic. But
yeah, some people said it was the policy was an issue, and I totally agree with that. But it's also culture, as you just pointed out.
Exactly.
That we just have this idea that we have a right to throw crap away. And that somebody else will take, and we ask somebody else, policymakers, to take care of our garbage, put it out of sight and out of mind.
But I think it's awareness.
We could have a cultural change that says, you know what, we don't want to have that kind of culture anymore. We want to have a circular economy.
Maybe it's not the government's responsibility. Maybe it's my responsibility.
But both. Because the government is us, right? The government is not out there. It's not somebody else.
It's
us.
It's our planet. It's our planet.
Yeah.
It's like when I'm hiking, I see, like today I hiked and I saw there were, you know, not that much trash, but I picked it up because why? It's our, it's my trash too. It's my planet.
Yeah.
It's my planet. It's our planet. And if we're not going to do that and take initiative, it's just, you know, our ocean's filled with plastic. The only way to get rid of the plastic is for us to spread our awareness and get everybody on the same page, realizing, wow, do you want even though you might be scared of a shark, do you want to see the shark be extinct someday? No, that would be sad. We want all the sharks Every shark that...
And we need them.
We
sharks
need them.
Have feelings, too.
Sharks are friends, not food.
I love sharks.
Sharks
and
are
good
friends,
to eat.
And Chet's nickname, by the way, is Sharky.
No, it, shark no it's not.
It didn't used to be Sharky, Rachel?
No.
He's embarrassed.
I don't get embarrassed. It's not accurate. Nobody's called me that in like years.
In years, but he used to be called that.
In years, way back in the day.
Way back in the day.
We catch and release for fun.
We were catching. See, we would do catch and release. We would never take our fish with us. We would just release them. And Chet one time caught a big.
Okay, well,
a
I still ate a lot of fish.
But yeah,
full
Chet
disclaimer.
Caught a shark, and we let him go. But it was still cool. He got a picture.
Yeah.
Of his little toothless. Chet holding a shark.
And from then on, we called him Sharky. I know.
Just for like a year.
So, Paul, do you have another good question for these two? Let's challenge them. I want to challenge them when they're here.
Well,
and get them thinking.
So, first of all, Rachel and Ryan, I feel hopeful in this conversation with you because I realize you're going to be the next generation of leaders.
Yes.
Shaping, culturally shaping our, you know, American culture, but also shaping our policy. And I've been teaching for over 25 years, quarter of a century.
Yay!
I've seen generation upon generation of, of college students in my classes.
Red for Ed.
And one of the things that I've been frustrated with since I was a PhD student back in the late 1980s, I've been frustrated that too many of my students, nearly all of my students over the years, have not really been motivated to be change makers and problem solvers. They've had other priorities. And something has changed in the last 5 years, and the character and culture of the students in my classes over the last 3 to 5 years is fundamentally different than anything I've seen in the last 25 years. And I see more students wanting to be informed and wanting to make a difference. And I don't know what explains that, and I'm wondering if maybe you have some insights for me. Why did you two decide you want to be informed and involved and make a difference in the world? Because you're special.
For me, it seems so dire. I feel like we have a responsibility, and it's a shame to just, like, shirk that responsibility to take care of our Earth. It sounds kind of hokey or something, but... We're truly just on this planet. We're just one of the species that share this planet, and we have already done a lot to mess it up, and it's our responsibility to clean it up now.
I would just say,
want it to continue working for us.
I don't know. And I surrounded myself with like really good people who kind of believe in the same message that I do. Pretty much what Rachel just said. Like, when you kind of are around the same people who believe the same things that you do, it's easier to like go about your work and actually like take action to solve problems and like care about
the snowball effect.
Yeah, really care about what you're doing. So I don't know. I think having that initial idea and finding people with similar ideas to you can just help amplify your voice. And
well, like things like this show, there's people thinking about it, and then they can.
Yes.
Become connected through something like this show or
part of it has to do with the statistics
the
too. Like I've seen the actual pictures of like the ice cap up in the North Pole and how much it's shrunk. Like it's actually like starting to happen. We're starting to see the actual effects of the climate change. So,
we've seen environmental deterioration for 50 years.
I mean,
were previous generations that were frightened about the direction that we were moving in.
They haven't done anything.
I feel like it's gotten a lot more extreme.
Haven't done too much.
But what I love is there are people out there that don't care at all. Mm-hmm. And what I love is I try to motivate them to start caring. And I've had some of those people we've talked about.
That's what we need.
Yes, talk about, oh, I'm feeling guilty because I can't take my plane. I can't fly my plane now by myself because I'm feeling like I should fill up the plane. So I've been actually flying Southwest instead of flying, you know, I know a lot of people, they have their own planes, and I'm making them feel guilty.
I don't know anybody who has their own plane. Kinga,
you hang out
with a rarefied crowd.
Are they hiring? No,
she's secretly Batman.
They know. So, but, you know, to get that feedback, wow, I'm now flying Southwest because of your show. That makes me feel good. And if you go back a year ago.
Not United.
That was good, Chat. That was good. But no, I, and then I, I show up places. We're going to go to a song in about a minute. I show up places and I get a flock of people that are like, oh, I love what you're doing. And I'm more aware and I feel bad about straws. And, you know, I'm recycling and I'm thinking about it. We're making people aware. And that's, I think that's what it's all about.
But I want to press one more question to Rachel and Ryan, if you don't mind.
That's what it's about. Thank you. Thank you.
I like everything that you said, and it makes sense to me. And, but one thing that I've noticed that's different with your generation is that the previous generations didn't have is that you seem to believe that you can successfully make change. And the students that came before you were much more cynical and therefore apathetic. They believed that nothing could be done to fix anything, and so why bother? And your generation seems to think that there are solutions and that it's worthwhile pushing to bring them to reality. And I'm wondering if you have any insights about why you feel that way when 4, 5, 10 years ago, students generally did not.
Okay. Well, for me, don't get me wrong, I definitely have my cynical moments where I'm like, we have already done so much bad.
We're
like,
all schizophrenic.
How can we turn this around? But it's the idea that there's already negative changes happening. They're already here, and we're still here too. So we're going to have to live with it. So I think one of the areas I'm excited to put my energy into is like climate change adaptation techniques. And because the Earth itself has seen only change since it was born, essentially. It's just been a flaming little mass.
Liquid hot ball of magma.
For millions of years. And it's
magma.
It's gone through ice ages and heating events. So it's really just a matter of whether or not humans can survive a earthly change. And so we can definitely do that. We've come so far. We have so many amazing technologies. We've traveled space. So I definitely have faith that we can adapt to the changes, though. Even though we've incurred the changes on the planet, I definitely think we can adapt to them and mitigate the negative effects, because, I mean, that's why what makes us human. We're smart enough to realize what we've done, and we can adapt to them and reverse our mistakes.
Awesome answer. Paul, I have a question for you. Mm. Do you think that...
Well, give Ryan a chance to answer.
Oh, Ryan, there you go.
We both...
I think Ryan's just chomping up a bit there.
You looked like you were a little bit upset right there.
And your question was for both of us.
Damn, all right, whatever.
Okay, let's go, Ryan.
Sick burn.
I don't know. I just... I don't think cynicism really has a place in our society. I think if you're going to give up hope that fast, then you should really...
You're part of the problem, not the solution.
You should really rethink your choices.
I can't stand pessimism. Good. I really can't.
I always think about this story, like the myth of Sisyphus, like this guy who's condemned to push a rock up a hill and then watch it fall down the hill for all of eternity. But he ends up finding solace in himself because he's conscious of the fact of what he's doing. And even though I think like climate change might feel like that rock sometimes, like I think you always just need to have like that push to just keep pushing the rock up the hill. So
Ryan, I love it.
I think that's my
take. That's why she's with you.
That's my take.
Beautiful.
That's my take.
Okay. So we have to cut to a song real quickly, and then we're going to come back with another question from Paul from School of Sustainability, History and Sustainability. Paul,
I'm gonna change it up a little bit, Kinga, because I actually wanna talk a little bit about, because I'm also I'm also a teacher. I volunteered at Valley Youth Theater for almost a decade, teaching improvisational comedy and improvisational acting to some amazing young people. And I, with you, Paul, I have been so inspired by these young kids. And now these folks are graduating from college, and some of them have learned Arabic, and some of them are, you know, photographers, and some of them are doing this, but they are all invested in social change.
Yeah.
They're all talking about it. They're all, and they were, since they were like 12, like they taught me. There was this young lady, that named Katie, that basically berated me for eating meat and teased me and made fun of me as her teacher for years. And now I'm vegetarian. And so, you know, it's like, okay. Talk about learning more right, from
Katie.
Them.
Shout out Katie.
Yeah, right? Shout out to Katie. So yeah,
you need to write a song called There Was a Young Lady Called Katie.
Yeah, exactly, right? So I have to start rhyming with vegetarian. So I have things to do.
You've
got to
sing that in some of your songs about vegetarian and vegan.
There you go.
Which, by the way, a question for Paul quickly.
There we go.
Vegetarian, humanitarian, if you didn't hear it. Right.
Do you feel that's the number Absolutely. One the number one difference that can make a change in the world is if people are more vegetarian and vegan?
Rhyme and Robin.
For the, no, that question no. is for Rachel, Ryan, and Paul.
Wait, hold on, but it's all about... I don't think it's working.
No, I'm sorry. I can't buy into that one. I think the number one thing that will bring change is to believe that you can bring change and then to get busy making it happen.
High five. That's what show's about, saving the planet. One show at a time. Chet, I'm just laughing that you ended up with that mic, with that headset today. Because I end up with that every time, and I have to hold that every show. And I'm so sick of it. Thank God you got it today. So annoying. Anyway.
That's not the message of this show.
I know it's not. So, Rachel, back to you. And a question from Paul. He had one last question.
No, that was your question. I answered, but you wanted them to answer too.
Yes, okay.
What's the main thing?
That we think would...
Vegetarianism?
Yes.
Vegan.
Okay, but if we're talking solutions, it's doing or sourcing everything locally because it's the most, or some of the most polluting things are shipping across our oceans, those giant freighters that are burning, you know, nasty oils as their fuel. Those are polluting way more than our cars and all of us combined over here.
It's true. So, there's only...
Local, sourcing everything local is the first step, but vegetarian would probably be number two.
What do you think? Do you agree with that, Rachel and Ryan?
I don't know. I do know how much methane cows emit, so I don't know. I think...
Ryan, you emit a lot of methane.
It's a lot. It's one of the biggest sources of global warming.
He's not wrong.
Oh, Ryan.
I don't know. I'm more along the lines as well that education is one of the most important things because even if we completely switched everyone, hypothetically switched to a vegetarian right now...
Vegan. Let's say everybody went to vegan.
Oh, that's extreme.
There would still be other aspects.
To absorb my chicken soul.
That would be still polluting or still not as sustainable as they could and should be. So I think through education and spreading the message of sustainability and the various changes and choices that you can make to make yourself more sustainable, I think that is what ultimately will make the biggest difference.
We need an all of the above strategy.
I love it. All of the above strategy and making it
to all the listeners out there. We didn't plan that out. That just happened to work like that.
You're perfect on the show. Paul Hurt, again, announce what your title is at ASU.
I'm a professor of environmental history and sustainability at ASU, and I'm very glad to be on the show, and I hope that everybody out there is inspired to be a change maker and a problem solver.
And what about our friend that's going to be driving in that Tesla? Should we announce him?
Oh, John Martinson. My friend John Martinson and his son, Neo, are going on a road trip from Phoenix all the way up to Canada and then all the way back down in a Tesla Model 3. And
Yay!
They're going to be stopping in communities and highlighting issues related to energy. And if you're interested in following their blog, they have a Facebook blog called TeslaRoadTrip.blog on Facebook group. It's now open to the public.
Sounds like fun.
And they're looking for suggestions for music playlists for sections of the trip.
Oh,
so,
okay.
You know, if Martin, if you want to...
Music, but Rachel
jump
does.
The band, and Yes is More Fun, that's what I recommend.
All right, great.
Oh,
well,
I love it.
Go on there
it.
To the Facebook TeslaRoadTrip.com and follow their... They're taking off in a couple of weeks, and they'll be gone for about a month. It should
be
fun.
Can we come?
Actually, I was going to say
a Tesla caravan.
I already told John I'm running a Tesla, and we're gonna that's part of our trip too. So we're gonna be doing that. So thank you so much, Rachel and Ryan.
Thank you.
We're gonna have them on
really.
Once a month. Rachel and Ryan
show.
Right, Chet? Thank you.
That was a great show.
And Paul, as often as we can have you. You're
we're
the
out
best.
Of wine. That's how you know it was a good show.
Goodbye, everybody.
Out of wine and out of time.
Okay, saving the planet.
One show at a time.
Thank you for listening to In the Green Room.
Join us here live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. or anytime on demand 24/7 on StarWorldWideNetworks.com.